Hello, I'm H and welcome to Rewind. Some of the best bits of Manx radio, but without so much of the beautiful music. This evening, as this is almost certainly the last Rewind of the year, unless someone else goes down with the Lurgy over Christmas, we'll look back a little further than the traditional month's worth of broadcasting and hear a little sample of Manx Radio's wide and wonderful output celebrating all aspects of life here on the island. From a chat with the sole remaining BG, Sir Barry Gibb, to a group of young Manx folk musicians playing at the Albert Hall and the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II, to the seemingly ever-growing popularity of sea swimming. Not forgetting the most popular topic of all on the Isle of Man, the weather. My most excellent colleague Siobhan will be looking back at all the biggest news stories on the Isle of Man over the last 12 months in her News to Review of the Year, broadcast, by the way, Tuesday the 30th at midday and again on Friday the 2nd of January at noon. So we'll not encroach on her territory with news so much. She'll do it far better than I can, and also she'd probably beat me up if I nick some of her carefully curated clips. No, we'll just try and give you just a flavour, a taster, if you will, of some of our output over the year. A year which, of course, saw events taking place to mark 80 years since the end of World War II. Something which inspired Manx Radio's Amy Griffiths to talk to a few of the ever-diminishing number of people who were around on VE Day.
The 8th of May 1945. After almost 6 years of war, that was the day Britain and its allies formally accepted Nazi Germany's surrender. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the then Prime Minister Winston Churchill announced World War II in Europe had come to an end.
Hostilities will end officially at 1 minute after midnight tonight, Tuesday, the 8th of May. We may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing. Today is Victory in Europe Day. Advance Britannia. Long live the cause of freedom. God save the King.
Of course, it wasn't the total end of the war. That came in August after Victory in Japan Day. However, it was a huge milestone and a massive step towards peace with the end of Hitler's regime. And at Churchill's request, the country took to the streets to celebrate. I've been to Grovemount Residential Home in Ramsey to meet some of those who took part in those celebrations.
My name's John.
John, hi, lovely to meet you. What do you remember about VE Day? Do you remember it?
Oh, yes. Well, I was 15.
Oh, wow, gosh.
Yeah.
You're telling me you're 95?
Yeah. Oh, well, I was in Pudsey then, and of course everybody was out dancing and messing about, you know, I don't know.
Because was there just a real massive sense of relief that it was finally over?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the kind of one thing that really stands out for you?
Well, there's nothing, just one thing, because there's a lot of things that are happening, weren't they? So I was quite happy that the war was over and everything was, we could get back to normal, really.
Yes, hi, my name's Alan.
How did you feel on VE Day when that news came that the war in Europe was over?
Well, the thing was, I got ready to go to school. And I was getting ready to go to school, and my mother said, I think you'll be sent home, mind. I said, why? She said, well, I'm sure I just heard two men talking in the street outside. They said the Germans had surrendered. So I went to school, though, and the said master, Mr. Slater, said, right over there, right there, got us all in the hall. He said, the Germans have surrendered. This is going to be called VE Day. And you can all go home. You know, you've got the rest of the week off. Hooray. And I remember that evening, and in the stage very near us, they built the most enormous bonfire. Now, you always remember a chap, he's one of our school friends' fathers. He came out halfway through with a kilt on and did a Highland fling in front of the bonfire. And then after that, that was it. You know, it was time to go home and forget about it, yeah.
Work my way around. I'm hoping I've got the right blue jumper. Is it Derek? Is that your name, sorry?
Yes, Derek.
Derek, hi.
Hi.
I'm Amy and I'm from Manx Radio.
Amy from Manx Radio. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad going to war and coming back and bringing 7 medals with him.
Wow. What were his medals for?
Fighting the Germans. And he was sort of fighting the war in North Africa, and in Malta he was chasing the enemy troops there, and then he came around to England and he started fighting the war from that side of the channel, and he's earned, 7 medals from fighting that war.
Thinking back to VE Day, and especially with your dad serving in the war, do you remember much of that day and what it felt like and how you felt?
It doesn't seem very much maybe to you, but I remember the song. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free.
I do remember VE Day. I'd just been left schooled about 6 months, just got a job at the main fashion house in the Isle of Man at the time. Lions, of course. And the place was just a holiday resort. It was wonderful.
A very different time to now, isn't it?
It is. It was just the service people that were coming on leave, the Americans and everything, they were all over here. And, of course, we had a whale of a time.
I can imagine. What kind of things were you getting up to back then?
Well, of course, we had several dance places, which was great. We had all the cinemas that we had then, which, again, lots of things to do. And it was just a lovely atmosphere, a great holiday place. And everybody, of course, was happy because of the end of the war. And, yes, I don't remember anything in particular except being kissed by absolutely everybody.
How exciting!
Just wonderful to hear Derek singing, "There'll be bluebirds." How wonderful. And I loved how he emphasised the peace ever after. Shame there's not so much of it around today, as I'm sure Derek and the rest of us would like. As for the kissing, well, who wouldn't? That lady did go on to tell Amy that several film stars of the day were on the island at the time as well. Sadly, she didn't get kissed by them. If there was a competition for the most famous people to hail from Manx shores, well, surely the Bee Gees would be well up, if not top of the list. Famed around the world for their timeless disco music, Barry, now the sole surviving member of the brothers, and earlier this year, Sir Barry, as he now is, chatted to Chris Pearson and Christy De Haven, down the line from his home in Miami. What became rapidly apparent is just how proud he still remains of his humble Manx roots, witnessed by some blue plaques you can see around the Isle of Man in venues such as Union Mills Post Office or St Catherine's Drive. Well, Chris Pearson asked him if one of the more unusual stories about their youthful years on the island was true. Spoiler alert, it was.
There's a story I heard, Barry, and you can tell me whether it's true or not, that when you and your brothers were out one day, you found a baby in a box floating down a stream.
That is correct.
Is it
that
true?
That is correct. Yes.
Did you ever find out any more about it or who it was or anything?
I tried. That, but we were standing at the side of the river in Spring Valley, and this box came floating down the river, and inside the box was a baby crying. So we picked the box out of the river. We took the baby in the box to a local house. It wasn't our house. It was another house. They took the baby from us, and we never heard anything more about it.
Wouldn't it be incredible if all these years later, somebody listening to this now picks up and says,
that.
Either that's me or it was my mum, whatever. If that's you, get in contact with us here at Manx Radio. We'd love
to
hear.
I'm the guy you dragged out the river. Thank you.
Do you know what? I have to say, it's so funny because obviously being Manx and from the Isle of Man, these stories, you know, I can relate to them. But when you moved to Oz first and then, of course, put to the States, what did people make of it when you talked about this crazy little island? Because we've just talked about fairies and superstitions.
I never talked about it in that light. I always said, you know, we come from a place that's extremely spiritual, very ancient, and that was something we were proud of, very proud of. And it didn't matter where we go in the world, I'm a Manx man, and that's the end of it.
I have to ask you as well, you sort of talk about wherever you go in the world, you move from the Isle of Man to Manchester, but even on the Isle of Man, you Chapel House on Strang Road, then St Catherine's Drive, Smedley Cottage, Spring Valley, Snaefell Road, Willison, on and on. What was it like as a boy with your brothers and your older sister to move around so much?
Well, it was more about me moving around because they were still babies, you know. So I had a couple of friends in Williston especially. We watched the, was that a, what they were building on the hill opposite Williston? I think it was supposed to be a school, but I'll never know. But we watched them building it. And bonfire night was the big night. Those Williston was fantastic. But it was all council houses, you know. Mm-hmm. And before that, I think my favourite spot would have been Spring Valley.
Yeah, and of course then you returned later and spent much more time here later on. But did you take certain traits with you then from those times on the Isle of Man, whether it was as a child or when you returned later? Do you think there's sort of an inherent Manxness that you've taken with you that you could put your finger on at all?
What I took with me was an extreme belief in the supernatural, an extreme belief in myth, mythical people, mythical creatures. And I left the island with those feelings.
I confess, I have my own link with the Bee Gees. My dad, Jim, used to know Sir Barry's dad, Hugh. Hugh was a drummer, my dad was a pianist. They both played in bands together at the time. And they remained friends for the rest of their lives, well after the success of the Bee Gees and after Hughie came back to the island. Meaning I got to meet the Bee Gees on a couple of occasions, and Lulu for that matter, when they came to visit their dad after he'd bought a property back here in Douglas. And to this day, I have a boomerang given to me by the boys hanging over my front door. If only I'd thought at the time to get them to sign it. Never mind. If you want to hear more of that chat with Sir Barry, by the way, you can hear it all on the 22nd of December at 6 p.m. or check out the podcast on the Manx Radio page or your usual provider of such audio. Now, from a group which is world famous to musicians who may yet go on to be, Scran is a band funded by Culture Vannin and made up of hand-picked young musicians who interpret and develop traditional Manx music in new directions. All wonderful players already. They've released an album, they've been at the massive Lorient Festival of Celtic Music, but earlier this year they were invited to play at a venue seen as being symbolic of having made it, the Albert Hall in London. Christy Dehaven spoke to two members of the band, or two current members, Daniel and Aelith, and Dr. Chloe Woolley from Culture Vannin, about how the visit came about.
Yeah, well, the whole Music for Youth hold a range of events. They've had the National Festival in July, and we were honoured to play as a part of that at a showcase. And then the Youth Proms sort of comes after that, and that's sort of a huge array of these people that played at the National Festival from all across the UK, and obviously the Isle of Man this year as well, all coming together in London for two nights of spectacular music.
Aelith, this is quite the excitement. I mean, how did you first hear about this?
We got the message from Chloe a few days ago, and I was so excited. I actually could not stop smiling.
It's the first time I think the Isle of Man's been included, isn't it? No? Oh, see, Dr. Chloe Woolley, who's also in the studio, you're shaking your head there. It's not the first time.
Interestingly, it's the last time there was a Manx band in it was 30 years ago, exactly, this year. 1995, Petch and Vannin from Ramsey Grammar School were in the same Youth Proms in Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, wow, what an experience. And I'm guessing it was a wonderful thing for them and no doubt inspired them. I mean, are any of those musicians still playing music now?
Well, I think we've all heard of Katie Lawrence, haven't we? So she was one of the members that went. So it's a huge deal back then. I remember, I think I was at university and the Isle of Man was so proud. So, 1995, and here we are in 2025. Doing it all again.
Aelith, obviously we've got you and Daniel here. You're not the only two members of the group. How many are in Scran?
There are seven of us currently, including two harps, a fiddle, guitar, keyboard, cajon, singer, same person, and another fiddle.
And tell us a little bit about the music that you play.
We try to keep traditional folk roots. Most of our sets and tunes are from the Isle of Man, but we do have a few from Ireland coming in. And we like to try and keep them lively, upbeat and sort of energised.
So how have you chosen the songs or the tunes that you're going to be playing, Daniel?
Well, we do have a couple of sets, collections of tunes that we like to think as our flagship sets. So we have a set of jigs from the Isle of Man, a set of reels from the Isle of Man, one of which is original, written by our fiddle player Frank. And then we have a song in Manx that we like to sing as well. And I believe we were asked to play the jig set and the reel set at the Albert Hall, which both of which we played in Birmingham. Scran is just such an amazing thing. I am still the newest member of Scran. I've been there for a couple of years, and I walked into what was a fairly tight circle and I clicked instantly. There's some of the greatest people that I've ever met, and my confidence has been boosted. My skills as a guitarist have improved drastically, and I think it's basically sealed the deal that I want to do music for the rest of my life.
How'd you get to the Albert Hall? Practice, as the old saying used to go. Good luck to Daniel and all members of Scran. Famous already, who knows where it might end. Today the Albert Hall, tomorrow the Super Bowl. Why not? Something which is almost as famous on the Isle of Man as Scran, though rarely as tuneful, is, of course, the weather. There can scarcely be a day in winter when there isn't some sort of warning about the weather. Wind and rain, the usual culprits, though snow, ice, flooding, coastal overtopping, also on the list. Usually the warnings are yellow, which is seemingly just a way of getting people to pay more attention to the fact that it is going to be wet and windy or high tides or whatever. Or amber, which means you really ought to be aware of the weather because it could be causing you problems and possible damage to a bit of property. But earlier this month, we had a rare red warning, which means there's a chance of a possible risk to life. This was for coastal overtopping, an issue which seems to be of increasing concern in recent years as climate change does seem, well, it does seem, unless you're one of the hardcore man-in-line non-believers, to be having an effect on global weather patterns, which in this part of the world seems to translate as winters being milder, but much wetter and windier. So what are we doing about it? A question political correspondent Phil Gorn put to Infrastructure Minister Michelle Haywood.
In terms of the red weather warning, this was particularly in relation to coastal overtopping. In Castletown, there's at least some good flood defences there, but other parts of the island which have harbours which are quite low and susceptible to this, did they escape?
As far as I know at the moment, yes. So you're right, Castletown was nicely, safely protected by the flood defence there. Ramsey's come very close today to flooding because that low pressure allows the high tide to come in at even higher. The overtopping, we obviously closed several coastal roads to keep people out from that. And I think you could see at the Port Jack end of Douglas Bay, the breaking waves were a good 8 to 10 metres up into the sky, which is always terrifying. We have had some damage to the Douglas seawall, so the entrance barrier on one of those has been damaged, but that's already been investigated. We've put sandbags in place, the big 1-ton bags, just to stop any further water washing through there, and we'll be looking to rectify that as soon as possible. We've got a number of similar sea defences that we need to get on and progress. West Quay and Ramsey is going in for planning. If it hasn't gone in already, it should be this week, but we've got seawall plans that we need to deliver, the other end of Douglas Prom coming down towards the sea terminal, and then to move towards the Empress end as well and to look at what sea defence is doing there. And you can see the difference in the debris that's coming over. So the design of the new bit of seawall and that return of the material back into the sea is actually saving us an awful lot of damage, and that's the kind of design that we'll look to extend.
There was a report produced about 9 or 10 years ago which identified all of the flood risk areas. I know in the previous government, I think something like 25 of the 150 identified sites had been dealt with. Is enough being done by this current government to effectively adapt to the change in climate?
I think we're doing a fair amount. So obviously Flood Team has moved from being a Manx Utilities thing to being within DOI, and the team there are really dedicated. There are lots and lots of areas we've been flagging up with them. They've produced the new flood risk maps which allow for climate change under the new predictions for climate change as well, which is really important because that gives us the long-term perspective on where do we need to be planning for. But I think there are things like Ramsey West Quay that, I mean, that's been in the offing now for God knows how many years. It needs to be delivered. Waterford, and we need to be able to, you know, that scheme will protect over 500 homes and businesses, and it's so, so important. We've done significant work around Laxey, and Laxey's really been the poster child and where most of the focus has been, because the floods there were so devastating, and we've done significant work there, but there are problems working in the river because we can only work during those summer months. And we've seen, I think we can track the weather data for the Isle of Man, there has been a significant acceleration in the volume and scope of the rain that falls across autumn and into winter. It is markedly higher than before. So actually things that we've had in place for years and years, like the bridge at the bottom of Jack's Lane that has coped with the water flow through there, is no longer coping because the intensity of rainfall now is so much more different to what we'd originally been dealing with.
I suppose the back announce to that piece is, well, time will tell. I do just wish sometimes, though, that as we have yellow, amber and red warnings, perhaps we could have a green warning to say, today it's going to be remarkably nice, not too windy, quite sunny, no rain at all, get out there, to encourage people to enjoy the island at its best, even in winter, and that it's not all doom and gloom on the weather front. Mostly doom and gloom, to be fair, but not all. One thing the weather doesn't seem to affect is the ever-growing body of hardcore sea swimmers on the Isle of Man, or wet-weather swimmers, as my friend calls them. They seem to venture forth into the briny in all weathers, assuming it's deemed safe, and they all swear that it's not just done for fun and bravura, but it brings measurable benefits to their physical and mental health, to say nothing of the great sense of community. Our own Christy De Haven, who, contrary to what this programme might have led you to believe, doesn't actually run Manx Radio single-handed, although she does do a good wodge, as you can tell, is a keen sea dipper herself, and earlier in the year spoke to a group of like-minded souls braving the waves.
You were new once too. Nervous to come along and not sure what to do. The photo showed smiles and frolics and fun. But would you feel like the embarrassed new one?
You watch for a while through your laptop or phone, wanting to join in and not feel alone. One day you felt brave, it was time to jump in. How lucky that day someone posted a swim.
The welcome was warm, but the water was chilly. It was freeing, exciting, and a chance to be silly. You loved it, it was bracing, but oh, what a laugh. Getting dressed was a mission. Quick, home for a bath.
Thank goodness someone shared their swim on that day. Or maybe you'd still be watching from a distance away. Now that you're settled, please post a swim or two, and remember that you were new once too.
I'm Sue, Sue Collier.
Lovely to meet you, Sue. Now, how long have you been jumping in the sea for?
A year last July. Yeah, I'd started really because my friend, Midge, used to swim in the sea. She was a real water baby, and unfortunately she passed away. And so every time I go in the sea, I think of her. Oh. And yeah, it's exhilarating, and it really is great.
And lovely group of ladies here this morning. Oh, so is there always a group this size?
Yeah, it can be 15, 20. Yeah, it can be 2, 3. It's great. Yeah, we just all love it.
Hi, I'm Joanne.
And Joanne, how long have you been doing this for?
About 5 weeks.
So you're quite new to this. How are you finding it?
Yes, great. Really good. Really, really good. And I'm glad I started at this time of year, straight in the cold. Great group of women here and a few men. I do once a week, yeah. Nothing dramatic.
And what made you want to start?
My daughter persuaded me. She's an avid outdoor swimmer.
Lovely. So does she do other places as well as the sea?
She's in London. She started at the Hampstead Ladies Ponds and will swim anywhere at any time.
What will she ever get in the sea? What do you think about you getting in the sea?
I think she's quite proud. Oh. Hopefully.
So you've not been on the island long?
No, 6 weeks.
So you actually moved here and just started getting in the sea?
Why not?
My name's Fiona, and I started swimming about a year and a half ago. A friend said, oh, come in the sea, and I was like, ooh, I don't know, it's going to be absolutely freezing, and I've been here for a very long time and I still haven't gone in the sea. Anyway, I did and absolutely loved it, and ever since then I've been addicted really. And every opportunity I get, I'm in. We also do social things together, and it's just become like a extended family really, and it's been really lovely.
To my shame, I haven't been in the sea for over a year, Well, not fully in anyway. I am what I call a wild paddler. I just go up to my knees at any time of year. Seems quite cold enough to me and ensures the family jewels don't become frozen assets. You can hear all of that programme about sea dipping again at 6 p.m, 22nd of December. Check it out. Podcast available as ever. You know, that's about it for now, so it just remains for me to wish you a very... What? You want to hear some of the bits? Yeah, well, yes, all right. Sometimes things do go wrong over the year for various reasons. Technical issues, bad luck, failure to link brain and mouth. And now that I think about it, there is a programme dedicated to just that topic, the Best of Manx Radio's Bloopers 2025, which you can hear on Monday the 22nd of December at midday, presented by, oh yes, me. Knew it was good. However, seeing as you asked, here's just a flavour of the best of the worst. Thanks for listening, and assuming we carry on making programmes, I dare say there will be another Rewind or two in 2026. Have a lovely Christmas in the meantime, won't you? Cheerio.
We'll start with a news round head-up. Oh, something like that, Siobhan. Just the news headlines, maybe.
Do we really need billionaires? Do we really need them?
Hey? I must declare an interest here, Robert. I must tell you something. I am not a billionaire.
Right.
So
okay.
I'd be safe if we don't need billionaires. Why don't you think we need billionaires, by the way?
But do you like omelettes?
Flight AI-171 was heading for Gatwick from Ahmedabad.
The Great North Air Ambulance Service, which covers the North East, Cumbria and the Isle of Man, has launched an urgent appeal to fund a virtual third helicopter. Sorry, a vital third helicopter.
One listener's been on to say, wow, the noise from Chanel's back door sounds terrifying.
The star is known for films including Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and The Sting, plus Avengers, and more recently, Netflix's Our Souls at Night.